Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, I caught up with Grammy Award-winning singer and musician Melissa Etheridge, and we talked about touring with Wynonna Judd and the foundation she founded to fight opioid addiction with plant medicine. Then, after 20 years, the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts is back, and we'll hear from the venue's CEO about what's to come. And guess who was crowned King of Bart Prom? I'll give you a hint. You hear this person's name on both of my shows every week. Today's theme is about going places. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. Music icon Melissa Etheridge has been touching her fans' hearts and ears for decades with her raw, soulful voice and moving lyrics. Last night, she and country star Wynonna Judd made a stop in the South Bay on their Raised on Radio tour at the Mountain Winery in Saratoga. Melissa's latest album, Rise, is her first album in 7 years, and it's inspired by some of the challenges she's had to rise above in her life, including her 21-year-old son passing away from opioid addiction back in 2020. Melissa and I chatted about this, and she shared a beautiful gem with me about life, loss, and love. Take a listen. Melissa Etheridge, welcome!
Hello, thank you.
You, Wynonna Judd, look like you're having so much fun on this tour. I saw some fan video online on social media, some of your stops. Whose brilliant idea was it to put these two super women together?
Finally.
To jam on stage.
It is things we've been talking about for years. And business-wise, it just takes, you know, you have to make sure you're both going out at the same time that you're doing this. And finally, this year, it worked, and man, has it just been paying off, literally. And everyone seems to be having a blast. We are definitely cut from the same cloth. We're just music. We're road dogs, and we just love it. And we're just having a good, really good time out here making music.
So have you all been friends for a long time?
I have known her for, you know, over 30 years, yes.
Okay. What's the bond like? Because I feel like this is like Sisterhood Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's definitely concert. Sisterhood Wonder Woman. It's definitely that's definitely going on. And we've both been through some great loss in our lives. And so we find that we really relate to each other. We are both staunch live musicians. We don't have any tracks. You know, we're old school. We think, you know, the fans come first. It's very important. We never take for granted that people are paying money to come see us. We just have the same sort of belief in our heart about live music and what it does for ourselves and for others.
And, you know, you are so loved for that beautiful, raspy, soulful voice and those powerful lyrics that you write to as well. So, like I said, I feel like that's a show where you dancing and singing and crying and just having a good time.
Yeah.
But you sing together. I saw some video where you'll sing each other's songs together and do some duets. How's that?
We do each other's songs. Every night. Well, we just started. It took us a while to get the shows up and going. And then we're finally like, okay. And at least one time a night, her and I do something together. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah, and it sounds so good. So the tour is called Raised on Radio Tour, and I work in radio.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just thinking about this title of the tour comes during an era of streaming. And you mentioned earlier, too, how, like, you are old school, just real live music, which I love. And I'm just thinking about how a lot of younger people don't know the experience of discovering an artist because they heard it on the radio. Yeah. For the first time. So tell us about the title of this tour.
Yeah, we really kind of got together. I think first we were thinking of a Thelma and Louise thing, and then we went, no, they died in the end, so let's not do that.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah. And so we landed on, you know what? We were raised on radio. I grew up in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and that's prime radio stuff. So that then,
yes.
The radio was always on in my house. My parents, gratefully, would just listen to it. And first we had AM in the 60s and the 70s, the FM came. and the rock and roll, you know, and all different types of music. I had soul music on one channel, rock and roll, and then country music on another. And they were all, the genres were mixed. We could listen to everything. It wasn't a part. And then the 90s, when we actually released our music, it was radio that brought us to the public, to you, the listeners. And, you know, today it's very different. I'm not saying it's better or worse or anything, but it's very different. And we want the audience to know that we're going to lean into those songs that you heard on the radio. You're going to hear your favorite hit songs. You're going to be happy when you leave. You're going to hear a couple new songs, and it just goes on and on.
Yeah. And speaking of new songs, your latest album is Rise. It's your first album in 7 years, so I know people were waiting for you to bring out some new music. And much of the music is inspired by some of your life's challenges. And, you know, Melissa, I was thinking about, just as I've been following your career and much of your personal story, you're like a phoenix. You rise from the ashes. And yes, she's raising her hands like, yes, yes, you rise from the ashes. And in 2020, you lost your son, Beckett, to opioid addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, you battled cancer as well. And when you rise up, you bring others up too. Oh. So like, you want people informed about maybe some of the things that you've gone through. I was recently watching your documentary that you did at the Topeka prison, women's prison. So you lift people up, you know, you bring people up. And I understand that the Etheridge Foundation is has a connection to this tour. So tell us about the foundation.
Yes.
And the connection to the tour.
Yes. The Etheridge Foundation, I founded that after my son died because I really saw that the classic ways of rehabilitation were not working with him. And for so many, they don't. And there was no other option. And it was very, very frustrating and sad. And I myself was found much relief in cannabis from my cancer treatments. And I'm a regular user. It helps me sleep, gets through depression, all that stuff. It's just really great. And I live in the great state of California that supports that. So, you know, loving that. The foundation raises funds for research into how psychedelics, plant medicine, you know, psilocybin, ayahuasca, ibogaine, these natural plants that have been around since the beginning of time and have helped for centuries and you know, thousands of years, and how they've been treated as awful drugs and Schedule One, and they're not. They are actually have many things to offer. This is not for everybody, but they are an option. And the research goes specifically for how these plant medicines can help with opioid addiction, with pain, with getting off some of the things that other drugs that people have been put on, Suboxone and methadone and these things. These plant medicines are, it's almost miraculous how they help. They can help after one session, and it's a change of life. But $1 of every ticket sold to the tour, it goes to the Etheridge Foundation, and it means it goes to such great, great stuff.
What have you learned? It's very few organizations that are doing the Etheridge Foundation is doing, right? That's what I read on the website.
Yes, we are the only, there are many, there are MAPS, ICEERS, these groups are, you know, going into research, but we are specifically about opioid addiction. And what we have found is the scientists have been studying the neural pathways in our brains, and neurological studies are showing incredible things where the addictive action starts with your neural pathways. You've got a groove there that has to be answered. And it's not about willpower. It's not, oh, just don't take it. This is something that will not let you function until you take the drug. Till you have that, you know, do that. And what the plant medicines do, and we've seen it, is it interrupts that neural pathway for, it creates a window, and you don't even have withdrawals from it. This is ibogaine especially. We've been, the research in the last couple of years has been so good. Everyone, it's very good with psilocybin too, but ibogaine can stop it. And for a few days, you have no withdrawals. You have the ability to rewire your neural pathways to where you don't have that addiction anymore. And people who have been addicted for 15 years have walked away with a whole new life.
Interesting, interesting. And like you said, a dollar from each ticket sale goes to the foundation to continuous research. And I want to advise people to also do their research, talk to their health professionals too as well. So last year, your daughter Bailey was married at a winery
Yay.
in the Sonoma Valley. Yay, Bailey! And you performed the song "More Love" from your latest album at her wedding. Listen, when I first heard that song, and I've played it a couple of times, I just wanted to cry, and I just thought it was so beautiful and so tender. What was the message you wanted your daughter to take from that song?
Well, children in general are wonderful. I mean, there's nothing like raising kids. And now that they're entering their adulthood, all my children, you see, I could sit down and say, "Hey, I've been through this. I'm 65 now. Take a left here, take a right there. Make sure you do this." I could tell them all that. They're not going to listen to me. And they really shouldn't, because each of us has our own paths. We are here to walk those paths and learn those things and build our own, create our own life. So I thought, well, maybe I can put it all in a song that they can listen to. And as years go by, find different things in it. So each verse is, you start, you're just learning to crawl and walk. Second verse, you're learning about life and love and loss. And then you go out and you try to do everything and you try to make all the money to make you happy, but you realize that that's not it either. And then in the end, what it is it, and I hope that, because I can't tell this to, I mean, I can say it to my children and their heads go sideways and go, "What?" I can tell them, and it's in the song, that when you take the ride into your soul, when you examine yourself, your own spirit, when you realize what you are, what human beings are, and our souls that just occupy these bodies, these meat suits for a while, but that soul goes on, and that's your best friend, and that's where you're going to find your peace. If you make yourself okay, and it's not up to anybody else, like no one else has to change for you to feel good, you figured that life stuff out.
Beautiful. My last question was, my birthday is coming up in a few days. I'm turning 47,
Happy birthday.
and I was going to ask for any words of wisdom and any gems, but you just gave them to
I'm
me.
telling you find your happiness, your joy, and it's the true definition of unconditional love, that you love no matter what the condition is out there. You are still loving, and no one else has to change. You are in charge of your own happiness.
Well, Melissa, we're going to end there. Congratulations on the tour, on the new album, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Janae.
That was singer Melissa Etheridge. Her new album is Rise. If you're one of those music fans who travel for concerts like me, Melissa and Wynonna's Raised on Radio tour is still going. They'll be back in California in Santa Barbara on October 23rd. Thanks to KLW sound engineers James Rollins and Gunnery Joe Johnson for their help on this interview. Coming up later, I chat with the king of Bart Prom, but up next, after 20 years, the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts is back with a new look and new events. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. An Oakland entertainment venue has, in a way, been reborn. In 2005, the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts closed for a $100 million renovation. And if you're a longtime Oakland resident, you likely went to the Henry J. Kaiser Center for high school graduations and concerts and rallies. Renowned people have been on the venue stage, including Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Tina Turner, and the Grateful Dead. And since its reopening this January, the center hasn't missed a beat with the big names. Former Vice President Kamala Harris has spoken there, and comedian Fox was there. They were all on this year's events calendar. And here to talk to me about the space and what they have planned coming up is Terry Trotter, the CEO of the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Janae. I'm so glad to be here.
I am so glad you're here because I can't even remember. I just remember I would pass. I'm born and raised in Oakland. And yeah. So I would pass the Interject Hydra Center. And I'm like, when are we going to be able to go inside? And I didn't think it was just never going to happen. I would hear about, you know, all these changes that need to be made. And I'm like, what? Yes. It's taking so long. And I have been to the center a few times since it's reopened. So, and it's really, really beautiful inside. And it's just a great space. It's right across the street from Laney College. It's a few steps, not a few steps, but it's a very, very short walk from Lake Miribart. It's ideal.
It is a great space, and it's a great location. You are so right on both counts. And, you know, I've heard that story over and over again. Yeah. People, I've walked by, and I was like, what's going on in there? When can we get in?
Right.
And, you know, it is such a shame the building was closed for 20 years. Yeah. And, you know, it just... it's part of the fabric of Oakland, and it so needed to be reopened. It was a long process to get it open, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we all know, what, the last 5, 6, 7 years, they've been a thing, right?
They've been. That's a nice way of putting it.
And this project, no exception, of course. You know, it was started in 2019, the construction, so right before the pandemic hit.
Okay.
And then we all know what went on there.
So what actually, okay, so it was closed for 20 years. Was over 20 years, was it this makeover, this $100 million makeover? I mean, what happened? Like, what took so long?
Yeah, so... unfortunately, the city shut it down in 2005 just basically because they did not have the money to operate it. And so it sat for over 10 years of just with nothing going on.
Okay.
And then the city said, rightly so, we need to get this reopened. And the way they did that was to go out for bid with developers to find somebody who could help develop it.
Okay.
And so the initial plan was that this would be a public-private partnership whereby part of the building would become office space.
Okay.
And then the theater would be maintained.
Okay.
Again, the pandemic hit. You know, all the construction challenges that were that happened within that. But also, you know, office space is not really what it used to be in terms of our needs here in the Bay Area anymore. And so there was a pivot that happened with a decision to say, okay, let's relook at this project. And so that was part of what took a long time in the last few years is figuring out, okay, what are we going to do now? Mm-hmm. What we, and I say we, all of us are very lucky is the developer continued with the project, even though we decided not to do the office space. And just left the building as it is, which is the main components are a 1,400 seat theater and a large arena that'll seat 5,000 to 6,000 people.
Okay.
And then some other spaces. But those are kind of the two anchor spaces. So those were left intact. And what he has decided to do, or the family has decided to do.
So the
developer is Orton Development.
Okay.
And the prominent family there with Orton Development has said, we need to get this project open.
Okay.
And we need Oakland to have this. And so what they've done is they have donated all of the funds that are needed now to cover the construction loans on the building, which is about $60 million.
Wow.
So it's a significant gift to the city of Oakland, and that this building now will be run as a nonprofit art center.
Okay.
So I represent Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts, and we are a nonprofit new art center in Oakland, in the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts.
So is the $60 million, is that included with the $100 million, or is that
That's part of the $100 million.
Okay.
Yeah. The renovation cost over $100 million, actually.
Okay.
But there were construction loans that totaled $60 million. And rather than try to saddle a new organization with having to figure out how to pay that off, they decided that, that was something that was important to do for the community.
Okay.
And so we are lucky now to have the building debt-free.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. There's been really amazing events so far this year. I went to Dino's Alive, which is still going, which is an immersive experience where you see life-size animatronic dinosaurs. And Porfirio Rango, my producer, and I, we had a really good time. I did attend the talk with Kamala Harris. Chaka Khan was there. She did a talk. So there's so many different types of events. So what's the vision for the space?
Sure. So, you know, the vision for the space at its highest level is to really be the East Bay place for arts and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And with what you mentioned, there are so many different spaces here. There are so many different things that can be done. And that's kind of unusual for a single facility. And so we are really trying to create a broad palette of opportunities for people to come and see, whether it's family programming, like the Dinos Alive immersive experience, yeah. Whether, you know, it's concerts. Oakland is known for great historic theaters. We have the beautiful Paramount Theater. We have mm-hmm. the Fox Theater. We have a lot of comedy and concerts. Right. We have some of that as well, just different kinds. But we want to do more than that. We want to have other things as well. The arena, for instance, we see sports coming back into that arena. Really? Basketball. We used to have high school basketball championship games in there. We would love to see that come back. To small immersive events where, people have a chance to maybe see the spaces in a different way. In fact, a little sneak peek.
Okay, I like sneak peeks.
Coming up in the fall, we are actually going to be activating a brand new space within the venue that has not been used by the public before. It is the Henry J. Underground.
Okay.
We will have another very fun entertainment experience that will be announced in the next couple of months down in that new space. So I think that's what's so exciting about this venue is the different types of things that can happen in there.
Okay. Because my mom, she told me when she was younger, she would go to concerts there, and they would have to walk underground to get to the theater part.
Right.
So is that the part you're talking about, underground, or
it probably is.
Okay.
There, the building was reconfigured a little bit, partly because of doing the seismic work.
Right.
There
right.
used to be a stage that turned between the theater and the arena, and that's now fixed.
Oh.
And
okay.
So some of the paths of travel have changed a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Because when I was doing the Dinos Alive exhibit and we were walking around too, I was kind of like, what's going on? So I was a little confused. I was only confused because I hadn't been there, and I was
right.
being a nosy journalist and walking around. So I also went there. I've been there a few times. Okay, so I went.
We love it.
Yeah. So the co-founders, the musical co-founders, which is one of my favorite things.
Me too.
They hosted a special program, and it was part musical, part startup competition, and so that was at the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts. So what about I've named some big names that have been there and that are coming too. You guys have a lot of big acts coming. So what about smaller community events?
Yes.
I remember you guys had like a roller skating night. Is there space? And honestly, when I told people I was going to interview you, people were asking me about this. So what opportunities are there for people, like just in the community, for holding smaller events? Or not even small, but just very community-based Oakland, because that's how we are.
Absolutely. And I love that you bring up the co-founders because, we were so thrilled to be able to partner with them on that event. And because one of the things that we want to do as an organization is to showcase local or Oakland creative talent.
Okay.
And certainly that crew, is the, some of the best of the Oakland creative talent, and they're taking it to New York now and hopefully on to Broadway.
I hope so.
But so to be able to actualize it in Oakland was really amazing, and that represents a lot of what we want to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point of also smaller organizations or Oakland nonprofits, we actually do a lot of events with Oakland nonprofits for fundraisers and things like that. We are a great space for doing gala events. We have multiple gala events that happen within the space, raising money for all sorts of different things, and just for community events to take place. But we also want to really help support some of the small arts organizations as well. So specifically, one of the needs we hear all the time is rehearsal space.
Yeah, that's a big deal right now.
Very difficult to find rehearsal space.
Yeah.
And so that is something that we're working on. I had the privilege yesterday of seeing a showcase from the Prescott Circus Camp, who has been with us for the last 5 weeks now. They are wrapping up. This is their last week.
Okay.
And so the kids did a little showcase for the staff, and I was blown away. You should have seen these kids riding unicycles. Oh, my gosh. Walking on a giant ball while juggling.
Wow.
And these are like, 15-year-old kids. It was really amazing. And we were able to work with them so that they could host their summer camp at the center. And we've done a lot of partnerships with them. We love that kind of opportunity where, you know, kids can, where we can help support organizations that are also teaching kids and, you know, trying to build up the youth in our community.
Nice, nice. Okay. Yeah, because like I said, that was a question people, they wanted to know. And I know, too, you all just reopened, so you're in an early stage just trying to find your footing.
We are. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I think is one of the difficult things about where we are. You know, we are a brand new organization. And when I say that, I mean, you know, we were actually founded at the end of last year, the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. But yet, this is a building that now everybody knows it's reopened, so it doesn't feel like we should be still in that kind of startup mode, but we really are. And learning how to use the venue, learning what people really need out of it. Like we talked about rehearsal space, and one of the things we're trying to figure out now is how do we make that happen at a very affordable price point? Mm-hmm. Because it just has to be. And yet the cost for opening this huge building and securing it and all of that is, it's pretty big. And so we are trying to look at how can we, you know, how can we tweak things so that we can, you know, maybe have a portion of it that we can open and not have to open other pieces so that we can, you know, cut down the operating cost and make it easier for people to be able to access, you know, and that's all a learning process.
For folks just tuning in, I'm chatting with Terry Trotter. She's the CEO of the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts in Oakland. And after 20 years, it is back open with events. And so she's just telling me what's the vision for this center that many of us have been waiting for decades for it to open. So and we have about 5 more minutes. So what's the challenge here as far as, you know, because I'm thinking, so now this venue is being run by a nonprofit now, that the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts nonprofit. And this is a historic venue. And so you were saying, like, it's, the nonprofit is like a startup, but how do you do a startup for a legacy, you know, historic organization? So what are some of the challenges that you guys are pushing through right now?
I think
in this unique space.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, a big challenge is, and you know, I have run multiple nonprofit arts organizations, and so to some degree,
over 25 years in Michigan, in Idaho, so now she's out here. So
So I think you always have this. You always have to balance this. You know, we, for instance, we want to be accessible to the community. Yeah. We want to be partners. We want to bring arts organizations in, and we will. We also have to be able to pay the bills. And what you reference, this is a building that was built in, that opened in 1915.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's just been renovated. That doesn't mean things still aren't old.
Right.
And not everything was fixed. So, you know, we have to continue to upkeep the building. You know, just everything. You know, we're talking about a $4.5 million nut just on regular operating. Without any of the programming going in. And so balancing and figuring out, okay, we have to be able to pay for that, and then we also want to be able to be accessible. And so, you know, now we are building, you know, we're building our community of people who come to the organization, who know about us, who come to the shows, who help support us in that way. We're also beginning to build up a community of donors and sponsors and supporters, people who, you know, are excited to have this and think about all of the things that we can help and partner with Oakland to really continue what I think is a huge renaissance happening right now in Oakland.
How does it feel for you to take on a challenge like this? You're smiling because I'd be like, oh, my God.
Honestly, this is one of the greatest privileges of my career. I absolutely love this building. And you mentioned it, and everybody mentions it. I've never been in a building before where people walk in, and I've had people just tear up walking into the arena because it means so much because of what you said. They graduated there.
Yeah.
They were in the Christmas pageant there. You know, their parents have memories there.
Yeah.
The whole building just oozes memory and oozes, you know, Oakland culture. And so to have the privilege of stewarding that back into the community is pretty amazing.
So one more question. Okay, so I went to Dino's Alive. Dino's Alive exhibit, which is still running. Yes. I don't even know it's an exhibit. It's experience.
Yes, yes.
It's a lot of fun. Definitely take the kids or big kids like me. We had a great time. Anything else coming up you want folks to know about?
Absolutely. We are, in fact, next week. Okay, here's another preview.
Okay,
next week
on.
We'll be announcing a new family series that we have coming up. So a series of shows over the next year, specifically geared towards family audiences. So parents, kids, grandparents and kids. Mm-hmm. You know, big kids and little kids.
Nice.
And, you know, we are trying very much to fill gaps. What's not happening around Oakland or around the East Bay? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've discovered is, you know, programming is really intended to get kids into the arts and to provide something that families can do together is something that we're not seeing a lot of. And so that's one of the things that we want to be able to introduce into
Is there a way, and we need to go, and I could talk to you for so much longer. Is there a way for people to contact maybe people who, because a lot of artists listen to my show. So is there a way for people to contact you or is there a form to fill out or something so they can pitch ideas to you guys?
Absolutely. On our website, which is thehenryj.org, there is a contact. There's a contact form and there's a, you know, press here and you can do info@thehenryj.org and it all comes. I see almost all of that.
Okay, great. Okay, because like I said, a lot of artists listen.
Yeah.
Terry, thank you so much. Good luck. I will probably see you because I've already been going there several times, and you guys just opened in January, so I've been there already.
Well, we love that.
Terry Trotter is the CEO of the Henry J. Kaiser Center for the Arts in Oakland. That's the one right across the street from Laney College. Visit their website for the upcoming events, and we'll have a link on KLW Sights and Sounds webpage. And next up, two of my KLW coworkers were recently crowned at Bart's first ever prom. We'll hear about that and what else Bart has cooking. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7. Recently, two journalists from our station made Bay Area history by becoming royalty. Reporter Wendy Reyes and our very own Sights and Sounds producer, Porfirio Rangel, were crowned king and queen at the very first ever Bart Prom. Their creative prom proposal video won them the crown, and more than 1,200 people attended the sold-out 80s-themed party and danced under the Rock Ridge Station rails. But this is not the only fun event Bart has organized for writers. Joining me is Alicia Trost. She's Bart's chief communications officer and the 2026 King of Bart Prom, who is blushing, KLW's own Sights and Sounds producer, Sir Royal, His Royal Highness himself, Porfirio Rangel.
Hi, Janae.
Porfirio's going to get me after this.
What an intro. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you,
Alicia. So Wendy Reyes wasn't able to be with us today, but I want to give a shout out to her and congratulations to her. So Alicia, okay, where did this idea for the Bart Prom come from? I think it was great. I thought it was a great idea.
Well, thank you. We've been doing really fun opportunities to come to a Bart station and give you a reason to celebrate Bart. And Bart Prom was one of our most recent wild ideas. When we told other employees and Bart police we were going to throw Bart Prom, they like laughed at us. Are you serious? But they also have learned with the Alicia says we're doing Bart Prom, we're doing Bart Prom. Because we've done an anime festival. We've done comedy on a train. We've done all sorts of wild things that no one would ever expect from your local transit system.
Yeah, no, and I definitely want to talk about some of that. So, Porfirio, the video was great.
Thank you.
So, tell us about the video. What was the concept?
Well, first of all, shout out to Gandhi Joe Johnson, a KLW engineer, because he's the one who shot it and directed us. So, huge shout out to him. But I remember I looked at the social media proposal that you guys put on the website that we could be submitted for Bart Prom and Queen. I was like, I have to do that. And so I saw that the dress code was 80s with an under-the-sea twist. Mm-hmm. And I kind of assumed that that meant it had to be in the video. And so I just remember, like, the wheels were here in my head of, like, okay, I wanted to show some kind of body of water, but I couldn't think of one that was close to a Bart station because I also want to incorporate Bart. Okay. And so then it just hit me. I was like, why not Lake Merritt? And so then I went to this whole like story of like, well, Lake Merritt, like the chemicals in there turned you into like mutant mermaids. And so that's how we're alive. And then we come out, and Wendy was actually the one who asked me to prom. Okay. So I was like, it only felt natural for her to be the one to ask me in the video.
Oh, okay. So that's what, okay. Mm-hmm. And you all were like mer people.
Yes.
So the fashion too as well, the costume that you all had. And yeah. Porfirio's a cosplayer. So, and Porfirio has a very vivid imagination and loves stories and Disney and all that kind of stuff. So you came up with the idea of like, let's have, yeah, the mermaid.
Yeah, mermaid. Definitely the mer people, like, you know, again, because it was 80s. I was like, okay, so how do we incorporate Under the Sea with, I was like, okay, let's do flashy sequin stuff and add seashells and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I just, yeah, came up with the idea and then just got a lot of people's input. Does this look underwatery, you know? So they were like, no, so I had to add more and more.
And you said the little kids were looking at you like, oh, how cute.
Yeah, at the BART prom, like when I first got there, because I had like glittery makeup to kind of give like a scaly kind of skin, this little boy walked up to me. He was like, why do you have makeup on? And I was like, I couldn't think of an answer, so I was like, to look pretty. And he was like, okay.
That's how kids are. They're like, yeah, okay, I just want to answer. And yeah. Porfirio is sitting here with his BART crown here, which is very, very, who designed the, do you know who
we ordered it on the internet?
Okay.
And I have to say, their video really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah,
it was
did.
A landslide. He hit all of the right themes, and it was so fun. And then when we decided to do Promposal, I never anticipated something so well thought out and creative and fun. So we were really excited. And then it was just so fun to actually crown them at the event.
Okay.
I brought the crowns in like over my head and like this, the crowd like parted for me to bring them. I mean, it was really fun and we had them up and it was just such a fun night.
So what was going through your mind when you found out? I think I was more excited, Alicia, than them. I was so excited when I heard they went. I just want to say, you guys did not promote KLW at all.
Mm-mm.
You guys did not promote KLW at all.
No.
I just saw it flash up on the screen and I saw people talking about it at work and I was like, what? So yeah, what went through your mind when you found out you won?
Well, to be honest, I thought like the voting thing was like a 72-hour period. And so when like it was announced the next day after you guys like posted it that we were the winners, Wendy actually texted me. And I was like, wait, what? And so I had to like look online and then you guys announced us as the winner. I was like, yes, we did it. Like, I was definitely like over the moon. I was very happy.
Alicia, were you surprised that 1,200 people RSVP'd? I mean, you all sold out. I'm not, because I know how Bay Area people folks, that, to me, that's San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, all that kind of event, you know.
We were not surprised.
Okay.
When we did Valentrain, which is speed dating on a train,
right,
that sold out like in under a day. When we did our Star Wars train, every time we do anything, there's so much demand. Mm-hmm. If anything, like, please release more. And we had not thrown something like a prom that was in an enclosed space.
Right.
And that was such a party atmosphere. And so I was not comfortable doing beyond the 1,200. I mean, people were begging us to release more tickets. And I was like, we've got to just do one under our belt that size. That was with an entry. When we did the Let's Glow Anime Festival, 4,000 people came.
Wow. Where was that at?
That was at the Warm Springs Station, but there was no ticket entry. And so it was, I feel more comfortable having an event that large when it's not enclosed with ticketed events, with us having to get people in safely and keeping it safe. And that station just has a much larger footprint.
Yeah,
because
I was
Rock
like,
Ridge.
Yeah, Rock Ridge is not as large. Wow. Okay, so you know, what was at BART Prom? What were some of the things? Yeah, take us there.
There was a lot of photo ops. There was a dance floor. You know, the first half of the prom, there was a DJ. But then the second half was a live band.
Okay.
So it was like reliving your prom, high school prom experience, you know, just all the dancing and stuff. But there were food trucks. There was a place to buy BART merch. I'm pretty sure you've seen my BART tote bag.
Yes, yes, I have.
But it was really fun.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And who, like, what kind of people did this event draw, Alicia?
You know what? It drew all types of people, which is what was most exciting to me. We had families coming as a night out, like two parents really dressed up with young kids, like 5 and 6 year olds. We had older adults that were clearly far older than these younger families.
Yeah.
We had a lot of 25-year-olds, but then a ton of just date night, which we weren't necessarily expecting. I wasn't expecting, you know, folks my age, the 45 to 55 category, lots of them were there.
Oh,
and
nice.
We threw it because, one, we definitely want to create events for folks that feel like they want to be part of something, but they're shy. They may not have dates. They may want to be able to mingle with like-minded folks that possibly on the spectrum. And that is the type of people that we cater to and that we actually really encourage to come. And I do think that that was like what we met that demand, because so many people show up and they're not the type of folks you're going to find at a bar. And that's also part of our strategy. We've heard loud and clear, younger generations, they don't drink.
Right.
They want to meet people. They don't want to meet people on an app. They don't want to go to a bar.
Right.
And so why don't we create this like really safe space for them to come out? And so you could tell it was just all generations, all different types of people. Some people dressed in 80s, some people dressed in Under the Sea. Everyone was dressed up, though. Like, no one was in jeans and a T-shirt. No one. So I love that they went all out for the event.
Yeah, people like to be creative and be in costumes in the Bay Area. For folks just tuning in, I'm chatting with Alicia Trost. She's BART's Chief Communications Officer. And KLW Sights and Sounds producer Prefira Rangel is on the mic because he is the first king of BART Prom. And he's going to get me for this. So going back, Alicia, to what you're talking about, some of the things you all have held. Okay, so you had anime event, 4,000 people, speed dating on BART. I've noticed the sign. I mean, you know, you and I both work in media, so I've noticed, and I write BART. I don't have a car. Prefira doesn't either. So we're like full time.
Yeah,
we're training bus folks. Mm-hmm. So what I've noticed is just some of the branding with BART has changed. What color? Alicia's like, you noticed my dress.
Yes, I
know what you've been doing.
That's what we've been doing.
I've noticed that. So talk about that, because I saw something where you mentioned, and you know, BART ridership is not what it was pre-pandemic.
Right.
So I want to know, was this the game plan?
Yes. Okay. We don't want to be that stuffy, white-collar train to get you to downtown San Francisco with your newspaper, but you should still read newspapers and please subscribe to local news to get to offices.
Yeah.
We want to lean into, we are part of the culture. We are part of the fabric. We make the Bay Area's heart beat. And part of that comes out in what we're trying to do here, these events, the brandings, the colors we use, the people we feature in our posters and ads and social media. This is about retelling our story coming out of the pandemic and trying to bring ridership that isn't about a work commute and instead about whatever you need us for and a place that you can come safely and be welcomed at all times.
And I didn't have the stats because I know the crime has gone down since BART has installed the new gates. I don't have the stats. Have you seen a difference? And since you all have been hosting these really, really, you know, fun, I haven't been, I mean, Prefira was just gleaming after he came from BART Prom, but have you seen a change? Have you all seen a shift? Are you seeing a difference as far as, I mean, I don't know if that's hard to even measure, but have you seen an uptick in ridership with these events?
Yes, the data is showing this strategy is working because Saturdays and Sundays are recovering at a far higher rate than the weekdays.
Okay.
Not only that, but there's some really interesting data that shows us, such as before a Giants game. So their ballpark, it's a long walk unless you get on Muni, which is a bit of a journey.
Right.
And before, I believe, people weren't taking BART as much because the data wasn't there as much to show for
the
Giants
game.
Hold on. But now our highest days of ridership are showing their Giants games. So what I believe is happening is folks that before were taking the ferry and driving, they're saying, you know what? Why don't we try BART? Like they're thinking about BART and just trying it one time and then hopefully coming back. Because now instead of the record days being the Dreamforce conference, of course, all of the big victory parades, the obvious parade days, they're becoming the concert days, the sporting themes days. And that's not what it was before pandemic. So I know that's working. Other really cool data that's interesting, sexual harassment at BART. That is a something near and dear to me.
I've launched
a whole program, Not One More Girl.
I mean, yeah,
and
more
we
girl.
Track the data. It is now at its lowest point ever. It had started at the high of 12% of our writers that said that they'd experienced sexual harassment in the last 6 months. That number is now down to 3.9%. And that is a very recent sharp shift. So there's just some really interesting data. We did a survey about sexual harassment asking people, do you feel safe and have you experienced harassment? An interesting trend that I would have never, ever expected. People who are LGBTQ had lower rates and actually said they felt safer on BART. Okay. And I believe that's because we are creating an environment where we know, where they know we want them and that we're welcomed and we feature them in our stories. Because if not, it's just, I just think that's a really interesting data set, saying that they actually feel safer than a cis male gendered person on BART.
So how does, and I know we have about 4 more minutes left, but how does the new BART gates factor into that? I have seen more BART police, because like I said, I take BART all the time. So I've seen that. And then, and I'm thinking too, you have like the way you all are promoting BART now. So
the new gates are definitely working because the crime has just plummeted. It's the percentages. Crime rate is down 41% year over year. And that decline has continued to happen, especially when you look at things like violent crime is just continues to go down, which is great. The fare gates are keeping people out. We're not like your quick escape route anymore. You can't hop a gate, commit a crime, run real fast, and hop a gate. There's still ways that you can get in and out without paying, but it's a lot harder, and you have to sort of plan for it, right? Like the piggybacking. So we're not a quick escape route. So I think people just are not committing crimes on BART because the fare gates are helping things out.
I have a question about the piggybacking, because that is an issue.
Yep, it is.
And I know, too, there was talks about having the gates close quickly, more quickly. Now, yesterday I was coming from Trader Joe's and I thought about that. I said, if that, because I had two big bags, I said, that gate closes, and I was tired. So I was walking more slowly than I normally would. I said, if that gate closed a little more quickly, I'd be in trouble. Are y'all taking that into consideration?
Yes. So the gates have sensors, so it's going to tell that you're not clear the door.
Okay.
But the moment, so it's not going to close on you, but the moment you are clear of the door, the sensor is still tracking you from you going forward, but behind you, that's when it swishes faster. So it's closing faster speed as well as like the moment you get past the door.
Okay.
Another interesting thing, if you really do not want anyone to fare evade or piggyback behind you, all you have to do is actually like walking slowly sort of helps, because the moment you pass the door, if you just pause or go even slower, then it really closes because the person can't push you through. It's just interesting. It's hard to describe, but we are making refinements and tweaks so that it's even harder to piggyback.
Yeah.
It's pretty much impossible to prevent, but we're doing everything we can.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because I wasn't sure if when you walk through, if there's like a little time, like it's like it'll say, okay, after 3 seconds it's gonna close. So it's based on
sensors. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you have a stroller and luggage, it's gonna see that you have that, and so that also opens the door a little bit to, depending on where you're carrying it, of someone piggybacking, because if they're right up next to your luggage, stroller, you know, big backpack, it's gonna still think that it's your stuff if the person's that close. So it's all sensor based, and we're still fine tuning it and doing tests. Yeah.
I just say when people piggy, and I understand too, you know, some people right now, they're just having financial issues.
Yeah.
It's just only when you piggyback sometimes, because I remember somebody pushed me, you know, and I'm like, I would have just gave you the money.
That's right. I would have just let you in.
You know, I would get, so I don't fall. And I saw someone kind of push a little bit, an older gentleman. So for anybody that's piggyback, just be careful, because you don't want to hurt, because that's a whole, and then you're on camera, that's a whole nother situation that could really, really not be good. But okay, but that's good. So now I have more clarity. Okay, so I'm going to feel, I can take my time now when I'm walking with my Trader Joe's bags. I'm sorry. I just don't want nobody to get hurt, because I saw somebody do that yesterday. So, okay, so BART Prom was a success. And you got your crown, and that's what they were awarded, was their crown.
Yes.
And bragging rights.
In bragging rights.
And free entry. And again, it wasn't because they're media. We didn't know they were media.
They didn't.
In fact, there was a lot of media there.
You get free entry?
Well, I got like a refund to my ticket.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you got like free BART.
No. Nobody gets free BART.
You said nobody gets free. Alicia, work on that. Alicia's like, nobody gets free BART. Okay, so you got bragging rights. You got this gorgeous crown.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 people. So where is it going to be on next year? Is it Rockridge still? Is it
we like to spread the love around, so I'd like to think we can come up with a different station and hopefully a different theme. I will pitch our two next events, which are in August.
Please, please.
So Saturday, August 8th is Tool Time, in the sense that we're bringing all of our awesome like trucks and the vac machine and stuff that people don't ever get to see because they come out in the middle of the night on the tracks. Right. We're bringing them to the parking lot of Fremont. So that's from 10 till 12:30. It's free. So like bring those toddlers, bring your family. Let's see these really cool trucks and stuff up close. Touch them.
It's,
you know,
it's like
them.
The real Bob the Builder.
Exactly. Right. And then the second Let's Glow Anime Festival. That's the one that had the 4,000 people last year. That is at the Warm Springs Station September 19th from 4 to 9. We have a second, we're adding a second stage because it was so popular last year. We're going from having, I think, 40 anime artist vendors to 100.
Oh, wow.
These are all local young artists.
Oh, nice.
They do
local.
This for fun. They're not professionals. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're extremely talented. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I love about this is we hire artists. And this is, I know that I'm speaking your language.
No, it's just about I'm glad they're local artists.
And you don't need to be professional. Like, it's just, we do these call for artists. You submit your work. We like it. We feel your vibes. We hire you.
Nice. Alicia Trost, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Porfira Rangel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Janae.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Alicia Trost is BART's chief communications officer. And KLW Sites and Sales producer Porfira Rangel is the first king of BART Prom. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darton. Thank you to our show producer, BART Prom King, Porfira Rangel, BART operator, Tark Ansari. Thank you to our engineers, James Rollins and Ganadi Joe Johnson. And thank you for tuning in. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Also, to make sure to click on download the KLW app, NPR app, or whatever, so that you can follow Sights and Sounds on your favorite podcast platform. All right, so until then, be good to yourselves and each other.